Well, good evening and welcome to this live stream on the 24th of March, 2026. It's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics here. It is not my normal show this evening, unfortunately. As you may have picked up from the pre-show conversation, I had a last-minute technical issue with regard to the system here, the Zoom system in particular. And despite running around like a mad thing for the last hour or so, I couldn't get Zoom working with Leith. I had a chance to speak with him, so he's aware. I will record a show with him and put it up probably on Friday, but I will nevertheless just have a brief conversation now. And just by start by recognizing all of the conversations in the chat there, it's nice to see a lot of people on, and I'm sorry that I've been unable to bring Leith on tonight too. As Cookie says, better on than not. And yes, Cookie also said, I never update Windows. Well, unfortunately, this particular update was a mandated update from Microsoft. So I had no choice but to update. And I think it's trashed the hard drive in the process. And yeah, so what we're going to do is we'll make it a general chat and probably a new show. And feel free to throw me questions because I don't have as much material prepared this evening as I sometimes do. But nevertheless, you know, we can have a bit of a conversation. And I should remind you, as I always do, that we don't provide particular financial or property legal advice. It's a general conversation. But if you'd like to get a question into me, use @walktheworlddfa to get my attention. And we can have a bit of a chat about some of the questions you might like to throw me. And of course, I've enabled Super Chat, which means you can get your questions on the list or indeed make contribution to what we do around here. Always appreciated. It's really very helpful to keep the show on the road, or generally on the road anyway. I've also got PayPal and Patreon services available if you'd like to support what I do. It really does help me just to get by and keep this show on the road generally. But as I said, unfortunately tonight we had a bit of a technical issue. But look, there's a lot to talk about. And what I really wanted to do was to, hence the title of the show, you know, is it Mad Max, which of course is a dystopian, you know, everybody's fighting for themselves, all of those things. And how does this play into the property market? That was a really important conversation, I think, to be had, particularly because of the recent news. You know, wherever you look, and I think I used this slide yesterday with Edwin, you know, people nicking fuel out of cars in Victoria, and the energy minister, Chris Bowen, suggesting that people should perhaps work from home. I also made the point yesterday, of course, that the Australians have counted petroleum on tankers at sea as part of our days of supply. Now, based on the situation, of course, that means that we could be running out of supply pretty fast. And by the way, the stuff that's on the water is including Iranian oil, of course. And the Sky News story here, more than 100 service stations across Victoria have run out of petrol, while more than 80 have run out of diesel as prices surge across the state. So we are, I think, in a quite difficult situation. Leith should be here, of course, but he's not here. That's unfortunately just going to be me now. Now, if we just go back over the last 24 hours, we, of course, were counting down to Trump's earlier statement about the fact that he was going to bomb the energy infrastructure in Iran. And then at the last minute, he capitulated, pulled back, claiming that there were conversations going on with the leadership in Iran. As Cookie says, very interesting moves just before, 15 minutes before the announcement from Trump came out. Actually, the markets move quite significantly, and so there's a big speculation as to whether there's some insider trading going on. It does look very, very, as Michael says, very, very concerning, possibly insider trading, almost certainly. And, you know, it continues as some dodgy practices that we've seen. But the bottom line is nobody quite knows exactly what conversations are going on. Nobody quite knows whether, in fact, there is a breakthrough or whether it's just Trump tackering out again. And the bombs are still dropping. and dropping not just on Israel, but across other states in the area too. So I'm not sure that we should assume automatically that everything is now tickety-boo. Hopefully there will be conversations, because clearly this is a conflict that cannot be solved just by throwing bigger bombs at everybody. It needs to be actually thought through from a perspective of dialogue, Georgia, rather than war. Now, Cookie asks, how's the situation here? Well, in the UK, prices have gone up. They've gone up about 12 pence per litre, which is not a huge amount. If you multiply that by two, that's the equivalent of Aussie costs. Supply is still fine here, and we don't have any real discussion about rationing or energy problems directly, although, of course, natural gas is a bigger problem in the UK. Australia is a big provider of natural gas. The UK is a big taker of natural gas. We're coming to summer, which is helping, and in fact, the government's price-setting mechanism in the UK has set a price fall for energy for the next 3 months of about 10%, because they changed some policy. They took out some of the policy settings that were there previously for green policies. So what's happened there is that the story has been one of, in the short term, a dip in energy prices, but the likelihood of spiking prices. And of course, the spiking prices will be determined later by what the price of both LNG and other things. The LNG is the marginal price of electricity in the UK, as it is in Australia. Of course, in Australia, you are a big producer of LNG, and gather that more is being produced and shipped off. But nevertheless, there is a connection back to electricity prices. Although, in fact, they did say recently that there might be a bit of a drop in electricity prices. But all bets are off, because we don't know quite where prices will go. And just to say thank you very much for the contribution to the drive fund. Yes, very much appreciated. I think we're going to have to probably get a new hard drive here. It's in my portable. In fact, I use a portable PC for the Zoom input, because it means I can run it wherever I go. But unfortunately, it's now dead. Well, you know, maybe I can undead it if I can find a way to uninstall the Microsoft update. We'll see. But I thank you very much for the super chat. Really help. And yeah, everyone's now recognizing that Victoria, New South Wales are out of diesel and petrol. Many are. Yeah. As I showed, the Sky Post was 100 across Victoria, and 80 have run out of diesel. So it's a real, real issue. And I guess the question is, I guess the question is that, you know, how is all this going to play out? Well, you know, let's just think this through a little bit. The first thing to say is, of course, oil is the foundation of a lot of things. And this slide just shows you just how much of everything oil is connected to. You know, pretty much everything you can think about, from pharmaceuticals to DIY through to sports through to, you know, everything requires oil. And the problem, of course, is that the price of oil, therefore, is an input into almost everything. And the story, of course, is that the likelihood is that even if conflict stops, the supply of oil won't immediately bounce back. It will take some time. Some of the production facilities are, of course, damaged. And, of course, even then, you've still got to get the boats to go from A to B. And if you are a long way away, then that's a problem. Now, of course, Australia gets a lot of its fuel from refiners in places like Singapore and Korea. And I know that there's a lot of conversations going on there to try and bring more stuff down to Australia. But my point is that this is much a broader conversation than just oil and LNG. It's going into a lot of different things, pharmaceuticals, the helium, as I discussed with Tarek and also with Damon the other day. And also some of the medical supplies. About 40% of pharmaceuticals that Americans use are actually based on pharmaceutical products that actually come out of India. India takes those input products from oil to create the pharmaceuticals. So you can see that the knock-on effects are pretty serious. And the question, of course, you know, how does it play? Yeah, Andrew asked the question, 90 days. Well, the 90 days never really existed. I mean, they were counting the 30 days. The US Reserve isn't now. They moved it to, across to Australia to, I think, Geelong and Brisbane. They included in the 30 days or whatever it was. So, yeah, it's a significant factor. And I guess the question, you know, more broadly, and I come back to the question that I tease with, you know, in the Mag and Max world, what does it mean for property? And, you know, is it right to be thinking about, well, you know, what could property be doing as a result of all this? I guess it comes back partly to confidence, but also partly to the broader situation. And interesting, Michael asked a question about the 1970s. Yeah, I remember the 1970s way too well. I'd just started work. I was actually working in a surveyor's office in Bath at the time. And through that period of time, you weren't allowed to drive around at the weekends. You could only get so much petrol at some places. The garages wouldn't serve people they didn't know, so they tended to serve their regular customers only. Price of a lot of other things rose. Sugar, for example, got in very short supply at that time as a result of the, you know, knock-on effects. And inflationary pressures, of course, lasted for close to a decade. And we even had things like inflation accounting. So people would actually each year inflate the value of assets by the amount of inflation. And so there was a huge issue. And, you know, pay rises 10-11% chasing very, very high cost of living. Inflation, of course, also reflected in higher interest rates. And high interest rates, of course, is another killer as well. So it was very painful. And I'll be honest, I don't think the UK economy really ever recovered from the significant disruption to manufacturing and other things back then. And it got to the point, if you look through the 80s and the 90s, the UK economy morphed into sort of more financial services related and those sorts of things. But effectively, it was the end of manufacturing. It was the end of being self-sufficient. And we became more and more part of the global economy and reliant on those trade routes and relying on international. And the neoliberal philosophy, as I discussed with Robbie earlier in the week, you know, absolutely everywhere. So in a way, I would argue that the echoes through the next decades were laid by that significant issue in the 70s and the inflationary impact. Now, of course, central banks, in theory, learned their lessons, or did they? Because, of course, they've been quite keen to try and keep interest rates under control and inflation under control. But now, of course, the question is, can they do that? And I think it's going to be a very important point. And as Cookie says, you know, if you think about it now, you know, maybe food transportation will become an issue. And all of those things together just created, you know, a significant pressure back then. We had lots of food shortages, lots of things that you couldn't get in the shops for months and months and months. We got through it. We also, of course, then had industrial action. And one of the things to notice was that earlier on we'd had strikes in the electricity generation industry because the miners were actually involved in some of their work too and were actually restricting coal to the power stations that were then coal-based. So there was a whole series of events in the 70s that really created a lot of pressure and a lot of difficulty. Yeah, just to explain, no, Leith is not coming on tonight. Now, unfortunately, it's my end. My Zoom computer died an hour or so before the show. I was talking to Leith and we had everything running. And then we tried an alternative route and he couldn't get his end to work properly. So we've got issues at my end, issues at his end. So we decided that what we would do is we'll cut our losses and I'm going to make a show with Leith on Friday. And we'll put it up then. Leith has dropped in. Yeah. Thanks, Leith. And sorry about that. We really have had a bit of a nightmare situation there with the, I think it was the Microsoft update for the operating system. And I think it's definitely an issue. But anyway, looking forward to that, Leith, with you on Friday. And we'll go into some of the issues. And look, Mad Max will be a good theme to explore. And look, just to sort of think about the context, as Cookie says, you know, going back to the UK, it's true that Thatcher was part of it with the, you know, there's no such thing as society. It's all about individuals. And, you know, we have to be, you know, beating the unions and everything. All of that was part of it. And Leith says it might have to be Thursday. Yeah, that's fine. I'll tic-tac with you, Leith, and we can tee up a time on Thursday or Friday to make a show that I can do either night. So that's not a problem. Let's just have a look at some of the other chomit. Right. So Michael asked the obvious question, how will this oil disruption impact house prices, interest rate predictions, etc.? And I think there's a very important question. And, well, it's interesting. If you reflect on the expectation of interest rates in the UK yesterday, at one stage, there was an expectation of 4 interest rate rises over the next year. 4. 1%. Go back a week, and there was an expectation of a 2 cut, so 50%, 50 basis points down the previous week. It came back a little. But the point is that once Trump said what he said, that 4 came back to 2. But even so, the expectation is higher interest rates. And even now, if you look at what's happening in and around the place, according to the interbank expectation, we are expecting to see interest rates in Australia on the implied forward yield at 4.8%. Worth thinking about, a few weeks ago, it was just over 4. So very significant rise. Now, that, of course, if it follows through, is going to have a very significant impact on the way that mortgages are priced. The fixed rate mortgages that are around at the moment are more expensive. Some banks have whipped off some and offered others at a higher rate. In the UK, almost all the fixed rate mortgages that were around were taken off the market over the last few days. And they're going to reprice and come back on later. So it is an interesting question as to what's that going to do. Now, you know, you can look at it a few different ways. Look at it from a consumer survey perspective. This is actually the latest from the ANZ Roy Morgan. And you can see there that the Melbourne Institute and the ANZ Roy Morgan consumer confidence has dropped dramatically. It's way low where it was now in the worst of COVID, with potentially a longer term fallout. And it's also worth noting that if you look here, the consumer sentiment expectations for inflation, according to Roy Morgan, above 6% and Melbourne Institute above 5%. So the truth is that people are now assuming that there's going to be much higher inflation. And that, of course, is going to crimp people's style. It's also worth noting that the RBA cash rate expectation, according to the futures pricing, is at 4.79%, the latest I've seen, and you can see how much that's come. It's come up very slightly, but it's still very, very high. So the truth is that expectations for rates will be on the high side ahead. And I guess the sort of question that you've got to ask yourself then is, well, what are the implications of all of this for those people with mortgages now and for those people perhaps thinking of transacting? Does it make any sense to transact, or is it actually a time to sort of just sit on the sidelines and wait? And I think that's the key question to ask when you think about the story of what people are going to do. If you think that it's going to be a problem, you know, not just in the short term, but later as well, then you'd probably hang off. And so listings are somewhat down. And again, I discussed this with Edwin yesterday. The latest on listings is that they're actually down from where they were a few weeks ago. So less people are putting their property on the market. Wonder why that is. Is it that there's actually just an expectation of uncertainty? You know, sometimes when things are actually uncertain, what happens is that people actually decide to simply go to the I'll do nothing. I'll just wait and see what happens. And once you've sort of got a sense of that, then effectively you can perhaps make some decisions there in terms of what you might decide to do. And people just are hanging on and waiting to see. So first-time buyers, of course, there were some first-time buyers who had that 5% scheme come in late last year. when rates were lower. They were already paying a reasonable amount for their mortgage at the time. Some of the banks actually were charging them a little more than the typical mortgage because it was the high LVR. Now, of course, interest rates are going up, and it's certainly significant in terms of actually what may be seen ahead. Now, as for how this all plays out into the medium term, it does obviously depend on what happens in the Middle East. But my point is the damage is already being done, and my expectations are now that we are going to see some significant changes in people's perception of property because, well, property investors are actually losing hand over fist, as I discussed the other week. It's actually quite interesting how much the markets have actually changed, and property investors, particularly in Melbourne, again, I made a show on that recently, Melbourne of property investors are most always underwater now from a cash flow perspective. And if you don't actually see the rise of capital appreciation, which is what people were actually thinking about earlier on, then, well, you've got a big issue. Now, it's quite interesting, you know, what will bond yields do? Not sure. Quite likely, possibly, to go higher, certainly for a period. The question is then what happens after that? And I don't know. You know, we'll have to wait and see how that all plays out, I guess. But my point is that there's enough impact on property already. First-time buyers, particularly new ones, under the pump. Remember in my recent show, 50% of mortgage holders have cash flow pressures. 75% of people in the rental sector have cash flow pressures. So it is a really big deal. And Strategic Viewpoint said, Melbourne sucks. Yeah, well, you know, some of the things are self-inflicted there. So some of the policy settings in Melbourne have been by the state government with the higher land taxes and everything else there going on. So yeah, it's definitely part of the issue. I got to say that I think comparing other markets, Melbourne is definitely the one that's languishing the most. Prices in Sydney are a little weaker, according to the latest from CoreLogic. So it does seem to me to be a little bit of a factor. Now, Peter made the point, CGT incentives to apply for new home construction only may even increase 75%. Watch how quickly opportunity investors of all categories pivot. Yeah, well, that could well be. If they do make changes to the CGT in the May budget, remember, of course, that the May budget now Chalmers is holding out as a reforming budget of some sort, although we'll see how reforming it actually is in practice and to what extent they're going to have to put taxes up, because I think they will, because taxes are not covering the increased government spending. So yeah, I wouldn't be surprised to see some changes. If they do target construction, new properties, that could be a thing. Interesting, in South Australia, I think, again, I discussed this with Edwin the other day, South Australia is talking about potentially bringing in some changes such that for the point of downsizers, if they downsize to a new property, they can potentially get an escape from stamp duty. Now, of course, that is an interesting question on the principle of, well, can you find somewhere you want to live? Can you find somewhere new? So they are targeting the new builds. But of course, the problem with new builds is you still need the people to build it. You need the materials to build it. And the fact of the matter is that material costs are continuing to rise. And in fact, wherever you look, you know, this one here from Rees, you know, pipe and fittings up 36%, corrugated storm pipes up by 31%, and PVC pipes and fittings up by 28.5%. So you can see here that building costs are rising substantially, and that makes it harder and harder for people in the building construction sector to actually make any returns. Now, how this all plays out, not really quite sure. And, you know, there are lots of uncertainties. One of the indicators, I suppose, we can look at it are the bond yields and what's going on there. And I'll just show the let's show the Aussie 2-year here. Okay, so the Aussie 2-year is now come back a bit, but it's still at 4.688%. The 10-year has come back a bit, but it's still above 5%. So that shows you that, you know, the markets are still pricing in further price rises, which is going to put more pressure on pretty much everything even now. I make the point, even in the US, rates have come back somewhat, particularly after Trump's discussions yesterday. You can see there the two-year was actually dropped back to 3.8 and the 10-year was down to 4.3. In the UK, it's pretty disastrous, really, with what we're seeing there, insofar that the UK has tended to have higher rates. And you can see there that there was a very big spike up to about 4.7%, down to 4.4 now, which is the 4.7% is close to where the Truss story was, the 10-year in the 10-year is just below 5 now. So you can see there. So higher interest rates. So one of the factors in all of this, higher interest rates, higher costs, et cetera, et cetera. Yes. Yep. Sorry about the issue. As I explained a little while ago, I'll just say again, Leaf isn't on tonight. Unfortunately, we had technical issues. I couldn't get the connection working properly. So I'm scheduling to record with him later in the week, and we'll put a show up then. So keep an eye out for that. I do apologize, but I'm just covering some of the high points in this rather truncated show, seeing as I don't like to miss the 8 p.m. Strategic Viewpoint says the UK economy is a basket case. It's pretty much actually, yeah, growth very low. The inflation rate still above where it should be. The Bank of England was expected to cut rates, but now expected to lift rates. So all of those things are actually playing in. So when it comes to property, then what does it mean? Well, you know, it is quite difficult to see how this can actually be other than not good for the property market. Now, of course, everybody says, property prices always only ever go up, and that's possibly true. But I have to tell you that the truth is also that sometimes property prices do go down. And I lived through three property price corrections in the UK in the decades that I was there. In Australia, we saw some small drops in prices when policy changes were made, when interest-only loans were dialed back, when investor loans were dialed back by APRA. And of course, when interest rates started to rise, people expected prices to fall, but they didn't. Why? Well, partly that, of course, is because of high migration. And it's worth reflecting on this little factor, that we are still getting a lot of people coming in the country. The latest data that came out just a few days ago was that we had more than 310,000 migrants into Australia over the last year, compared with just over 100,000 for natural growth. So a significant number coming into the country. And that's a little bit higher than many people expected, I think, in terms of the story. I made a show the other day about the population booming, Australian population booming as unemployment rises. Yeah, unemployment was up a bit, but the population growth was very strong. And I don't think we're going to see any immediate change to migration, despite what some people are saying. They've dialed back students a little bit, but actually migration, the dynamo of migration, will keep possibly economic growth a little bit higher than it would otherwise be, and possibly house prices a little higher than they would otherwise be. So it is pretty interesting. Cookie Boy says Iran of the Joker has the Joker card. I think they do, in a way, you know, because if you think about the way that it works in the Hormuz Straits, you've got all of these ships there, big targets. You've got warships in and around the place too, and you've got relatively cheap drones and other defense mechanisms that you can throw, and you only have to hit a few, and you've actually won. So yeah, I think it's definitely going to be not the way that the US would have thought initially, I think. Cookie Boy says, ask Canada and New Zealand how pumping migration to support a Ponzi worked out. Indeed. Well, it's interesting, and Leith would have covered this in some detail, that actually in both Canada and in New Zealand, where migration has come down, what's happened? Well, first is property prices have come back. Second is rentals are down. And so you can see there that it is actually migration, which is one of those things which are stoking prices. So if migration is dialed back, it tends to follow that house prices begin to adapt and fall. So I don't know quite how this is all going to play out. now. Don't know how long the Iran thing's going on, as we've got another comment here. We don't know how many interceptor missiles they've got. And they've got quite a few, probably, and they've got some boats and other mines and bits and pieces. So they've still got, remember, they've prepared for a good number of years to make this really hard to deal with. And as Strategic Viewpoint says, that maybe they'll just charge a big toll for people to get through as well. That could certainly hurt. And, you know, the chances are that however this is shaken out, it won't necessarily be to the advantage of cheap oil. So we'll see how that plays up. Yeah, unemployment rates did rise, as Cookie asked, both in Canada and in New Zealand. And, of course, the momentum in the economy eased back as well. But I guess it's a trade-off, isn't it? As Cookie says, yes, they have lots of drones. They do still have lots of drones. And I know that the Americans and Israelis claim that they've bombed the factories. Well, they've bombed some of the factories. Have they bombed all of them? Who knows? We'll have to wait and see how that all plays out. But it is quite interesting. Now, I want to come back to the Mad Max sort of theory, because effectively Mad Max was predicated on the idea of societal breakdown and, you know, everyone looking after themselves and not trusting the politicians or anybody else to look after interests. So, you know, everyone for themselves. Now, I hope we don't go there, but my thought is that we've got the situation, to be honest, where a lot of the signals from politicians, which are everything's fine, you know, we'll deal with it, don't panic, seems to fly in the face of what some people are thinking and doing. As I mentioned earlier on, you know, petrol has been siphoned out from petrol tanks in some Victorian places. And the question is, will they hold it all together or will things start to fragment? Now, I don't know the answer to that question. But in the context of that question, the idea that property prices will continue to majestically rise higher seemed to me to be a bit far-fetched. We know that listings are down, as I said a little while ago. We know that some vendors are looking to sell quickly and are prepared to adjust the price accordingly because they want to go to cash. And so all up, the chances are that we are going to see a little bit of eruption in the property markets. I discussed my scenarios the other day, and there is a scenario where things go on pretty much sideways, or maybe slightly higher. But there's another scenario that says things could fall. Remember that prices relative to income are very high. And if you actually think that incomes might be also crushed a little bit, maybe the government will make handouts again, like in COVID. But it seems to me we're in this sort of foothill, like in the foothills of COVID. We didn't know how it was going to play out. I think we're in the same situation here. I don't think we've got peak problem yet. I think peak problems are to come. So that's a way to think about what may be happening in the property sector ahead. Yeah, hello. Thanks for dropping in. I have to explain that Leith isn't on. I couldn't get that to work. I've got a technical problem with my main computer, and Leith also had an issue at his end just trying to get the slides to work. So we're going to make a recording and put it up later in the week. So it's just me chatting a little bit loosely with some of the comments. So feel free to leave your questions, comments in if you'd like to continue the conversation. I will make the point that, of course, this article here from Elizabeth Knight said, sellers are flooding property markets, but buyers aren't biting bait. And that's because some buyers are hanging out, thinking prices might go lower. Pricing, of course, is also predicated on mortgage costs. Mortgage costs are going up. Therefore, the ability to be able to get a mortgage might be a little bit difficult. And just to mention the R word again, as I highlighted yesterday with Edwin, well, the RBA has warned Chalmers of an impending recession. It's not baked in, but it's possible. Jim Chalmers has been given a stark warning by the Reserve Bank that a recession may be the only way to drive inflation out of the economy after the bank board split to support a second successive increase in the official interest rates amid growing uncertainty over the global economy due to the war against Iran. So 4.1%, and as I said before, rates could go higher. Bullock said that higher petrol prices would add to inflation, but they were not the reason for the rate hike. So already in the economy in Australia, there are inflationary pressures bubbling along, and she cautioned that inflation could push even higher without action. Inflation was already too high, reflecting the fact that demand is outstripping supply. So back to this issue of our overheated economy. And it's also worth putting the fact that markets are thinking there will be more rate rises, as we discussed. Also want to highlight again the Financial Counselling Australia entity, which coordinates the National Debt Hotline, said more people were seeking help with calls to the hotline in February, reaching their highest level since the depths of the pandemic. I mentioned the Roy Morgan confidence thing yesterday. And as Cameron Pickering said, the Reserve Bank has little option given the broad scope of inflation across the economy, but then uncertainty around oil prices caused by the war in Iran could weigh on the RBA. And that's the point, really. So will the RBA essentially have to pivot to cut rates because of falling growth and momentum in the economy? And will that work? Well, it's been done before, of course. We had that through COVID. Will they do it again? It's possible. If they do, well, prices will probably, house prices will go off to the races again like they did last time. I wouldn't be surprised to see government intervention as well. You know, well, let's find, you know, JobKeeper or HomeKeeper or something. You know, another program to try and help. But the point is, if that happens, then prices could go higher rather than lower. So my point is, scenarios are the only way to think about this. Nobody knows how this is going to play out. As Arroyas said, it's hilarious how no analyst dare to say that prices will fall, even though in 2019 prices fell 20%, and in 2022, before China reopened, prices also fell 15%. Yeah, prices do fall. But of course, you know, people don't like to believe that. Prices double every 7 years religiously, people think, but unfortunately that's not really true. And look, the fact of the matter is that it won't be the same necessarily in all places. So, you know, Perth has been very strong, although prices are not growing quite as fast as they were previously. Melbourne, very limited growth in recent years, but I'm still not sure we're going to see significant growth. Up in Queensland, there's still some momentum there, but again, it looks like it could be easing back. South Australia has been very strong. In fact, South Australia has been one of the strongest. But again, we could see some changes there. So again, you have to really go granular, look at houses versus apartments and all of those things. It's all part of that bigger picture. So it is an interesting question how all this will play out. And Smooth Operators just dropped in. Hi, Smooth. Yeah, well, nice to see you in. To explain Leith, unfortunately, we had a technical issue. We couldn't get Leith in tonight. So it's just me. So I'm just freewheeling a bit tonight with some conversations around property and around the question of will rates go up, will rates go down, will prices go up, will prices go down, and linking it back to the broader issues of the war and the fact that, well, a lot of it is not looking flash. Cookie Boy says, I think we're in a lot of trouble once we get inflation figures for this current shit show. I think we're going a lot higher. All depends on this war. Yeah, well, it does. It does depend on how this is going to play out. But, you know, we're already seeing inflationary pressures building through the supply chains. And just to think about one simple example, fertilizer. Fertilizer is now harder to get. Supplies are more limited. That means that the farms potentially will be less productive, or they will grow different types of food products this cycle. That means that you're building not just a short-term issue, but a longer-term issue, because food takes months to grow and harvest and come to the shops. And bearing in mind that, of course, those fertilizers from the Middle East were very much central to farming activity pretty much everywhere around the globe. It's not just Australia that's going to be impacted. It's going to be everywhere else. And, of course, that's going to put food prices higher. Again, some countries are going to be hit worse than others. I guess in some countries, people will still be able to pay for food. But if you are in a developing country, this could be absolutely disgracefully difficult to deal with. And if you think through the Ukraine situation, where some of the corn supplies were actually cut off for a period of time, that had an immediate negative impact on some of those emerging economies. So yeah, think of it more broadly than just Australia, I guess. Yeah, interesting question. Can you get a soft landing following interest rate hikes? It's difficult to do. Maybe. And as Belinda made the point, well, actually, prices in Perth did fall. They did fall 20%. Yeah, absolutely. I remind people that prices in Perth have gone up, have gone down, have gone up, have gone down, have gone up. Cookie Boy says people are thinking it's only oil. It affects a lot of products. It does. And the hydrogen story and helium story in particular, is fascinating because helium, of course, is used in the production of semiconductors, for example, cooling in data centers. So helium is a byproduct from the refining going on in the Middle East. So without helium, will the data centers work? How does that flow into AI? I mean, you know, the more you unpick this, the more you realize that this is a big and complicated picture that's going multiple directions. Well, Chalmers is definitely saying that inflation could go higher, fours or maybe even higher. Perhaps he's going to have to take some responsibility for high government spending. But again, of course, then if people have pressures, they'll look to the government. Through COVID, they learned that government would actually try and bail people out. How will they do that this time if they need to? There's another question. Where does that money come from? Is that going to then put interest rates up even more later? So, you know, you've got to think about all these things. The complication, the real complication this time, is rising interest rates and rising inflation at the same time. That's stagflationary. And once you get into that stagflationary bind, as in the 70s, as I discussed earlier on, it's very hard to get out of it. And it can take quite a few years. And it's fascinating to understand how demand destruction starts from that second. In other words, there's less demand for things because people can't afford to buy them. And that then puts more stagflationary pressures into the economy. And it gets harder and harder to manage. So it's a bit of like a thermal runaway. It gets more and more difficult to be able to deal with it. Yep, you know, Andrew, you are not the only person from Perth on the show tonight, which is good to see. Good question here. Well, if you get an oil shock recession, how will people service their loans? A lot of people, of course, are struggling already. I've highlighted the fact that about half of people have cash flow issues, but they prioritize their mortgage payments or their rental payments because they need to find somewhere to live. They cut back on other things. They cut back on discretionary spending. They cut back on the quality of food that they buy. They may cut back on dental and other things that they would need normally to do. And they tend to sacrifice those in favor of trying to keep somewhere to live. The other point is that if, in fact, people start not paying their mortgages, but not just a few, but quite a lot, then it gets much more difficult for the banks to deal with it. Because, of course, banks tend to extend and pretend. They tend to move people interest only. They tend to extend the term loans. We're already seeing that in some cases. 30-year mortgages are quite often now what's happening out there. So will the banks do that? Probably to start with. If they get a lot of people, though, in difficulty, what happens? And that takes us then back to the financial stability question, remembering that the banks in Australia are highly leveraged to residential property. They're really big building societies. And if this plays forward with regard to significant defaults and significant pressures with people, how will they deal with that? And then, of course, the question is, will the government intervene or not? How does that play out? Which is back to the, how does this, you know, what is the story? Robbie. Yeah, nice for you to drop in. Sorry to interrupt, Martin. We should have the numbers to pass the cash mandate disallowance motion. Labour has just had a meltdown in the Senate over the possibility of losing. That's very interesting, Robbie. And just to diverge for a minute. So Malcolm Roberts has put something into the Senate to basically counter the proposals, the very weak proposals that were put in to save cash, which of course meant that only a very small proportion of large players needed to actually have facilities, and basically saying, no, it's not good enough. And now it looks as though that could well be disallowed in the Senate, which is very interesting. So then that raises the question of how does the cash story play out from this point? I'd also make the point in the current environment, hold cash. It's quite useful, particularly if the story is that we actually have the situation with, electricity be running. If electricity isn't running all the time, what does that do for the electronic systems? Cash is king in those situations. And I do highlight the fact that this is a really important development. So we'll keep an eye on that and maybe make another show later on if we can do that to cover the latest on the cash story too. Andrew Joy made the point, yep, we are seeing a bit of panicking going on. In fact, there was a report from Japan that people are buying up, guess what? Loo roll again. Toilet paper. Yep. It's the toilet paper madness that was around through COVID as well. So let's hope that people don't buy more than they need, but I think they probably will, because people, when they have lack of confidence in the government, will tend to try and look after themselves. As Cookie said, never get rid of cash. It's a backup for when technology shits a brick. Yep, I agree. And Rob has made the point, Labour is playing dirty tricks, trying to avoid a vote. So there you go. Yes, well, they will do that, won't they, when they're actually up against the wall, trying to find a way forward. Yeah. And Robbie was on quite recently, actually. So, yeah, we'll get him on again at some point. But he was on quite recently. So once I get my computer fixed, emergency question at the moment, how on earth do I get my computer to work? Which, of course, is the main question at the moment. So I want to just make the point, very interesting, Australian property is a textbook example of the Cantillon effect. Foreign money flooded in, making everyone rich. And now that it's run out, everyone falls into poverty. I think that's exactly right. So, yeah, the international flows into Australia have been one of the things that have supported property and, of course, the broader economy. If that changes, then, you know, you can hear the sort of the slurping out of the money. And that means that the flows of cash go into reverse, and that means that that can have a significant negative effect. Yeah, it's worth looking up the Cantillon effect if you've not studied it. I made a show some time ago about that, which is quite interesting. And yes, interesting. Cool Lad made the point that the bus is now packed. Used to be almost empty. People were using public transport. What about electric vehicles? Yep. Well, for as long as you can charge them, probably good. What happens when electricity itself is a question? Remember that the marginal generator of electricity is gas. And as Jeff said, there's some hoarding going on at the moment, the local Aldi. So, yeah, unfortunately. Cookie's boy's advice, get rid of unnecessary subscriptions. And sit down and do a budget. Yes, 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 yes. And I also think it's worth noting, Cookie, good point. Free trade agreement. Of course, the Euro free trade agreement was signed today. Whether it's a good deal or not depends on who you talk to. But it is fascinating that there were a number of industries complaining immediately about how unjust and unfair the trade agreement was and how it will impact them negatively. Logan's made the point. Sunshine Coast since Friday. Good luck finding diesel. So, yeah, it does look significant. Now, there's a downside, but there's also an upside. EVs are a paperweight, says Cookie Boy. But then on the other hand, term deposits look juicy. Retirees rubbing their hands with glee. Indeed. And, the term deposit rates are definitely higher. If you have cash, maybe not so bad. Of course, a lot of people don't have cash, and that's a significant issue. As Tony LeCantro said, sandbag your finances. Yes, indeed. Well, I've got Tony coming on next Tuesday. In fact, assuming the technology can be fixed by then, hopefully it will be. But yeah, we'll see how that comes out. And of course, Tony has been warning about some of these things for some time, and therefore sandbag your finances indeed. As for the drill, baby, drill, well, yeah, interesting question. Of course, the economics up until now has not been very positive. They have done exploratory drilling around South Australian coast, but the economics didn't stack up. Maybe they will if the oil price stays higher. And of course, now the point is that the oil price may stay higher for longer. The forward futures are also higher than they were, which is, I think, a very significant factor when you think about how this all plays out. So, yeah, maybe. But remember also that if you actually do drill, it's going to take some time before anything that can deal with it. Cookie Boy, interesting comment there about Warren. Yeah, Warren's made some really good calls, I think, quite recently, and I certainly follow him. It's a very important alternative view. As you say, he's made some very significantly right calls of late, and he was never convinced about the inflationary pressures going away and suggested the RBA was actually keeping rates lower than we might otherwise have thought about. But there you go. It is quite interesting. Now, interesting question. Cash out now or wait for the next surge? Good question. Well, you know, place your bets. I don't know. Scenarios. I always show scenarios, right? There is a scenario where prices still hang around and go higher. Not significantly higher, but don't fall in Sydney. But there are also scenarios that suggest we could see a bit of a drop. And there is certainly a bit of a turn in the weather. It's quite an interesting thing that's going on at the moment with regard to particularly units in Sydney, where I'm seeing quite a lot of price reductions. On the other hand, houses are holding their value a little more. Other than the top end, I'm seeing quite significant reductions at the top end, where people are actually now taking their properties off the market because they can't get the people to buy at the price that they want to sell at. So it's quite interesting. Cookie Boy says, watch YouTube videos before you buy an EV. And yep, Cool Lad says, well, yes, always look forward to Tony LeCantro. Has a good sense of humor. Yes, he has a wicked sense of humor. He's certainly one to watch. Well, I think, okay, interesting question. I'll just cover that. Thank you for that, Skynet. Am I using AI? I use AI as part of my research processes, but not to write scripts or anything. What I mean by that is that sometimes you can actually get a different take on data, but I use two or three AIs and check and cross-check the different views that they have. Quite often I find I get different answers from different AI agents. And so what I do is to tend to start with a hypothesis that I've developed through my own research and then ask the AI to validate or not validate it. So that's the first thing I'm using it for. The second thing I'm using it for is I'm training an AI on my own data. And I've been doing that for about 6 months now. And I'm starting then to see whether it actually can tease out insights from the data set from my surveys that I might be missing. So far, hasn't come up with anything useful, but I'm still training the data and we'll see whether ahead there is actually more to come there. It could be quite interesting if that's... Oh, and by the way, come back to the transport issue. Cookie says the Sydney trains are definitely more busy during the morning peak. And... wait till we see people on top of the train, then we know that we've really made it. Well, we will see how that plays out. Well, I think I'm going to call it here. Done a reasonable amount, I think, tonight. So thank you very much for coming on and spending a little bit of time with me. Apologies again to the fact that Leith wasn't able to come in this evening. And to explain again, I did have some significant technical issues with my main computer crashing with a hard drive failure. It's an SSD, and it looks to me as though the recent update from Microsoft might be part of the problem. So I've got to try and sort that out now. Not sure how I'm going to do it, but we'll have a go. Leith is going to make a show with me later in the week, and hopefully we'll be able to get everything sorted out in some way or other so I can get to my audio and visual systems working appropriately to be able to actually bring video from Zoom in. It is technically a little challenge because, of course, it's part of the big setup here. Just to remind you, this is the complete setup, and you can see there that the computer, which normally has Zoom on, is nowhere to be seen. It is completely dead. It's defunct. In fact, it's annoying because it boots up okay and then crashes directly afterwards, which is a very annoying thing to try and troubleshoot. So I'll just have one last look at the chat here and see what else. Yeah, interesting. Michael makes the point, who's going to pay in yuan? Good question. And Cookie Boy says, night all. Thank you very much for coming in, Cookie, and spending some time with us this evening, particularly tonight. Thank you as well. And Michael says, You should do more Q&As. Yep, I will do more Q&As if that's what you'd like. SSDs are normally very reliable. They are. The trouble is that actually there was an update, a forced update that Microsoft pushed, which seems to be actually killing SSDs. So I think that's the problem. But I've got to find out a way of sorting it out. Belinda says, I appreciate your work. Thank you so much. Well, I'm glad you do. I'm going to continue to make shows and keep things going. Mr. Bill said it stuffed up his operating system. Yeah, well, it's definitely stuffed up mine. Mr. Bill says, yes, it's Windows. Indeed. Ryan says, thank you so much. So that's it. Thank you very much for spending time with me this evening. Have a good evening. I will be on next week, assuming that I can fix the computer stuff. We'll get Tony LeCantro to come in and we'll have a chat with him. And as I said, apologies about Leith. Unfortunately, it was my fault. And then we couldn't get his end to work either. So we had a pile on of problems. Then hopefully something that we can do. Yes, in theory, yes. But the trouble is, can I get the computer booting up long enough to be able to make the rollback? That'll be what I think needs to be done. Interesting. Cookie Boy says more Q&A shows. Okay, yeah, well, we can do more Q&A shows. Let's book more Q&A shows in. I love the Q&As and you know it's great to see what you guys are thinking. And as Logan says, can you restore an earlier point? That's what I'm going to experiment with now. But I'm not confident, but we'll see. Who knows? Anyway, thank you very much for spending time with us this evening. The doggies are not in their basket. They actually think it's time for lunch. So they've come and give me a nudge. Oh, there you go. That's Meteor. Hey, Meteor. Yeah, good girl. Good girl. There you go. Yes. And where's Luna? Luna is around there. Go on, go back to your bed. Good girl. There we go. There you go. There you go. They're now back. So there you go. Thank you very much for spending some time with us this evening. Apologies again for the mayhem, but at least we made it to a show, which is, of course, the main thing. And I look forward to seeing you on the next show. This is Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics, signing off. Take care.